I think that we have to really try to stop blaming stress as the major culprit, because there are plenty of women who have equal stress, but they didn't get the gene for migraine. So none of us can control whether we get the gene or not. And if we have it, we need those of us who have it, those of us who treat women who have it, we need to really think about trying to de-stigmatize the disorder. It's a biologic genetic disorder. That's what it is. And it has hormonal influences, and it's not anyone's fault. And it is more frequent in women. It is more common in women, but that's simply because they have the hormonal influence that men don't.
Perimenopause and menopause mark one of the most significant chapters in a woman's life. These years are associated with many physical, cognitive, and life changes. And for women with migraine, this can mean attacks that become unpredictable as hormones fluctuate. Many of us feel lost and hopeless during this time, and our symptoms are often not well understood by doctors, or worse, they're dismissed and we're told it's just part of aging. To help us understand what is actually happening during this time of hormonal chaos and what we can do about it is Dr. Jan Lewis Brandis, a leading headache specialist who is passionate about helping women navigate migraine through every hormonal stage. Dr. Brandis, welcome back to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be back.
Well, this is a topic that's very important to many people in our audience, and we do have a lot to cover. So let's dive in. What's happening hormonally during perimenopause, and why does it affect migraine so much?
Well, the beginning of perimenopause is usually heralded by fluctuations in estrogen, many more fluctuations in estrogen. And we know that during perimenopause, estrogen levels are even higher than they are when women are undergoing or going through their normal menstrual cycling in their, say, teens, 20s, 30s. When they enter into their 40s in perimenopause, estrogen levels have these fluctuations. They're often higher, which means that when they fall for a period, they have a sharper transition. And we know that fluctuation in estrogen has an impact on cortical excitability. So for women who are vulnerable, for women who have migraine, that's a time when that fluctuation, those many more fluctuations, can exacerbate migraine.
Okay. And why does migraine worsen for many during perimenopause and then, fortunately for some women, actually improve after menopause?
Well, it's again that fluctuation. It's the irregularity of estrogen. We know from older studies looking at Dr. Somerville years ago looked at the drop in estrogen as being the triggering event for menstrual migraine. Well, if you're having repeated drops during perimenopause, that can serve as a trigger. And so women who are having irregular cycles, maybe it drops, the estrogen drops enough to trigger the migraine, but not a period. Maybe women go for a considerable period of time where their estrogen stays low, then they change. Women are often going on and off of therapies, hormonal therapies during that time, sometimes in an attempt to get them under control. I think the thing that is most important to me as I think about working with individuals who have women who have migraine is to look at the overall pattern, because I think if you look at the overall pattern, for an individual woman, that's how you begin to see what their hormonal status, what their hormonal status is, and what can you do that will treat the hormonally driven migraine most effectively. So let's just say if we look at what happens, a woman who has menstrual migraine, we know from a number of studies that those women may be more vulnerable to worsening during perimenopause. There's not full agreement on that, but I would say most headache specialists agree with that. But if you look at, some people will point out that, oh, when you get to be in menopause, that and you, let's say you're not on any form of hormone therapy, your estrogen is low and stable and migraine gets better. Well, that's true for some women. But one may not be in that group. Are they someone who tends to do better with lower estrogen states? Are they someone who does their, when I say better, I mean their migraine is better. Do they do better during high estrogen states? If so, that may be the ideal candidate for if someone, say, in their early 50s and they're having vasomotor symptoms, hot flashes, night sweats, that person may do beautifully on hormone replacement. If you have someone who always has tended to do better when they were off any kind of hormonal therapy, or off combined oral contraceptives, that person may do better in a low estrogen state. So I think we have to look at what the history is. When did they start having migraine? Did it occur around the time of menstruation? What happened if they went on combined oral contraceptives? Did the migraine get better? Did it get worse? What happened if they went on one of the intrauterine devices that has progestogen? What is that pattern? And did they worsen? If you're dealing with somebody later in menopause, did they worsen if they were placed on hormone therapy? And were they placed on, what kind of hormone therapy were they placed on? I think it's one of the, in the Women's Health Initiative, which led to the sort of boxed warnings against the use of estrogen in women and really frightened many women and the clinicians taking care of them. Many physicians were reluctant to prescribe hormone therapy for women in general, much less those who had migraine.
I know from experience that there are many overlapping symptoms between perimenopause, menopause, and migraine, such as hot flashes, anxiety, disrupted sleep, brain fog. That's a big one. How can we tell what's migraine, what's perimenopause, and what's both?
Well, I think one of the things that's really important is to remember that migraine attacks are 4 to 72 hours. Now, in someone who has chronic migraine with very high frequency chronic migraine, there can certainly be a blurring of that. But there should be some interictal periods or some periods between attacks, typically, where you really feel normal, where you get back to normal. And when that begins to blur with, say, brain fog, that may be a time to really think about, is there something else going on? In my experience, three of the things that we find as the first harbinger of perimenopause, one is sleep disruption. So women with migraine who may have been sleeping fine, they may have been doing very well, all of a sudden they wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning like, boing, hello, and they can't get back to sleep. And sometimes vasomotor symptoms are part of that. Another thing that can happen to these women is that they have a marked exacerbation in their migraine frequency. Sometimes it's frequency and severity. Sometimes it's just frequency. So when I see someone who's in, let's say, 30, 43, 44, who's been doing beautifully, they're responding to their acute medication, they're not having many breakthrough attacks, they're doing really well, and they feel good about their control. And then you get a call and they say, can you please see me because I don't know what's wrong, but my headache has just gone out of control. My migraines are just out of control. The first thing I think that one should think about in that sign, you have to think about obviously other secondary causes for headache, but perimenopause is a secondary cause for headache intensification and an increasing frequency. And then I'd say the third thing that we have seen in our group is that we see a lot of vestibular migraine presenting then. But I would say that in general, migraine does not, the pattern of migraine, I'd say with the exception of vestibular migraine, in my experience, the pattern of migraine in terms of what happens during an attack really doesn't change. You can have, if you have brain fog before you had perimenopause, you're likely to continue to have it. But I really would caution anybody who has been told, your headache's going, your migraine's going to do this or this or this. I usually say that, migraine does exactly as it pleases, and it's our role as clinicians or our role as migraine patients to try to help figure out what is our pattern truly like, and how can we partner with somebody who really wants to help us address that component of migraine treatment.
You don't have to take it in all at once. You can return to extended interviews at your own pace with the All Access Pass.
Let's focus on the biggest topic that's at the center of these life transitions, and that's hormone therapy, or what used to be called hormone replacement therapy, or HRT. First, what is the primary goal of using hormone therapy for someone with worsening migraine during these years?
Well, during perimenopause, it may be to stabilize that estrogen fluctuation. So during perimenopause, that may be an important component. I mean, that doesn't mean that someone doesn't need to be on regular preventive therapy or prophylactic therapy for migraine, but that may be an important way to address it. So if someone still needs contraception, it may be that a continuous combined oral contraceptive pill is a really good choice for stabilizing the levels and for ushering someone from early perimenopause into late perimenopause. That's particularly true if someone needs contraception. So result in the one's 40s for late pregnancies is thinking that someone's they've passed into menopause and they really haven't. So it's important that women don't just get hormone therapy, that they get what they need for contraception during the perimenopause. So if a woman still needs, let's say she has not had tubal ligation, or her partner is, sterilization, then those women will need something like a combined oral contraceptive. Another option may be a progestogen-only pill, and those may be good for certain women. Another option may be an intrauterine device, one of the progestogen intrauterine devices that can be placed and left in. Often after women have been on those intrauterine devices, the IUD, for say, in my experience, as early as 3 months, they may quit having menstrual cycles, which may help the migraine, and then they also have contraceptive protection if they need or want it. So there are many different options within the perimenopausal timeframe, but the choice often depends on whether they need contraception or not. If they don't need contraception, then that may be the time when women can be offered more traditional, or things that are more traditionally thought of as hormone therapy. If a woman still has a uterus, though, it's important for her not to be on unopposed estrogen or estrogen therapy alone. So if someone still has a uterus, they need to be on estrogen and a form of progesterone. So that's really important. And that advice has not changed. That did not change in the recent relabeling for hormone therapy. So if someone is, again, at the end of perimenopause, and we know that menopause itself, you're counted as being in menopause when you've not had a menstrual cycle, you've not had a menstrual period for 12 months. So a lot can go on in that. And so we use the combination of estrogen and progesterone. So that, and we tend to use PATH. So again, patch. Gels can be used in that setting. I don't use oral estrogen, which of course is what was used in the studies in the Women's Health Initiative. I don't use oral estrogen because of the potential effects that it may have on lipid status. So we don't tend to use those. Absorption can vary. And the other thing that we don't use is, or that I don't recommend, there are many different viewpoints on this, so I want to make clear that this is my perspective on it. I don't use implants. We don't support the use of implants in those because the release may be variable and the levels can have wider fluctuation, which is exactly what you're trying to get away from to really stop. So those are some of the options that are then available. As I mentioned, gel. So there you could go through various scenarios, but the formulation for estrogen, whether or not someone needs progesterone, those can be really fairly low. They can be very useful. And now that we see what's really happened looking at the data over time, is that estrogen provides bone protection. So it helps women with bone protection. It helps, can help their cardiovascular status. It can help with probable dementia, as it's now labeled, as the black box warning for hormone therapy has been removed. And it may also, it does not play the role in breast cancer that was originally attributed to it. I think probably the most critical thing to think about with hormone therapy is to think about when it's begun. So when is it offered? When is it begun? In the Women's Health Initiative, the average age of women in that study was 63. So those women were well past menopause. And we know that really the optimal approach for using hormone therapy is to start the hormone therapy early. Start it maybe in perimenopause, again, if contraception is not needed. Start it at the beginning of menopause, if the patient is a candidate for it. Start it then. What we don't want to see is someone started on hormone replacement at, say, age hormone therapy at age 58, because they've been off estrogen since they went through menopause at 48. So in general, I'm not aware of any studies that show the perfect time if a woman's been off estrogen and she needs hormone therapy. I'm not aware of a perfect time to begin it. I will tell you that in general, we don't start it if a woman has been through menopause and off hormone therapy for a year, sometimes 2 years. That would be sort of the upper limit, because what can happen is that you can have plaque rupture in women who've had an advancement in their cardiovascular disease or in their vascular disease, and that's what you don't want to see.
Talking again about safety, so you mentioned that the FDA removed the black box safety warnings. How significant was that development for the migraine community? And that was removed in November 2025.
Well, I think it is extremely significant. And I think what we have seen is that many women from 2002, 2003, many women have not been offered or have been told not to take hormone therapy after that the Women's Health Initiative was posted and all the concerns came to light. I think what we see is that there were a lot of flaws in that study, and rather than taking them and trying to dissect out what that really meant for women with migraine and for women where we're trying to prevent any kind of cardiovascular event or cerebrovascular event, since migraine has an association with stroke, we really did women a disservice. And I think the most recent estimate I read was that 50 million women in the United States have lost the potential benefit or the benefits that estrogen might have provided them because of this warning.
I see that in people generations above me, my mom, my mother-in-law, that they've really missed out on things and they have issues now that maybe they wouldn't have had. The question of hormone therapy for women with migraine with aura is one of the most common we receive. What do we know about migraine with aura and stroke risk? And when would hormone therapy be a definite no for someone who experiences migraine with aura?
Migraine with aura is the group where there is felt to be an increased association with stroke. That increased association is largely in women who are under age 45. Once women move, say, past 50, once they go through menopause, then the conventional risk factors for stroke really come into play. So that's sort of a break point for women. I would say the one thing that's hard and fast is that women should not be on, say, an estrogen-containing birth control pill if they smoke and have migraine. And that's even if they just have migraine and not migraine with aura. But certainly someone who has migraine with aura, estrogen, and smoking is a complete do not do this. So I think that one has to be firm about making those choices. That's a boundary one really can't cross. I think the other piece for me is that, again, if you look at a lot of the information the the migraine-associated risk for stroke is actually fairly low.
You mentioned vasomotor symptoms, and that is the hot flashes, night sweats, heart palpitations. Are these more common in women with migraine?
Well, you can read one study that says they're more common. You can read another one that says they're really not any more common in women who have migraine than women who don't have migraine. So I think that is, in my view, that's sort of up for grabs.
So if someone is experiencing that and they can't take hormone therapy due to having aura or for other health reasons, what are some non-estrogen options to help with these symptoms?
Well, there are progestin-only pills. There are progestin IUDs that can be used. And certainly, one of the things that we always want to remember and really attend to are lifestyle and behavioral treatments, non-pharmacologic treatments, as they're sometimes termed. So being careful about sleep, being careful about hydration, being careful about dieting, diet not going too long without eating. Another thing that we sometimes see and that has been raised as a possibility for women who are having a struggle with migraine in menopause is weight gain. So menopausal weight gain is something that many women experience and many women fear. And now it's being emphasized that that may be an important part of why some women worsen, because of the pro-inflammatory state that obesity can render one in. So that's another important point. But I think it's really important not to shame a migraineur for any of this, because we have to all of us try to do the best we can do in terms of non-pharmacologic therapy. But for most people, there may be, in addition to those, there may be some non-estrogen therapies which can really help. And certainly for, as we look at the preventives that are used for medication, it may be really important to have someone on a preventive that also lowers blood pressure. So if they have high blood pressure, to make sure that their bone health is addressed. Again, looking at those kinds of parallel issues that women are going to experience in their 50s.
One of our community members, Alicia, said that the challenges of perimenopause are hard to navigate with traditional doctors. And she wants to know what happens when you're not quite ready for hormone therapy and no doctors can seem to tell you how to handle the slight transition before you go fully into menopause.
I think, you know, she brings up a really good point. I think a lot of headache specialists are very loath to offer hormonal therapies. That's not how most of us were traditionally trained. And so many people are really reluctant to do that. So if your headache person, if your headache clinician is reluctant to do that, it's really important to also have someone who's very up to date on the hormonal components for treating perimenopause and menopause. And something, if you're looking in your region, it may be that someone who's a member of the menopause society, that may be someone who specifically looks at that. They're not headache specialists necessarily, but you might partner within that. So sometimes I may have someone who's exactly in her position, and if I'm not going to give it, then I'll write my recommendations and give them to the menopausal, the gynecologist, or whoever the menopausal specialist is.
So moving on to practical management and treatment strategies, do existing migraine treatments need adjusting during perimenopause?
Rarely, in my experience, does doing hormonal therapy, whatever it turns out to be, that alone usually does not treat completely effectively migraine. So you need conventional migraine, acute therapy and prevention, usually in my experience. And then it's the hormone therapy that really gives you the level of control that you want for patients who have migraine.
Well, as I'm sure many who are watching this talk can relate to, these years can also come with other challenges like new health issues, poor sleep, plus increased life stress, job changes, kids going away to college, aging parents. How do these factors influence migraine, and how important is it to address them as part of a treatment plan?
Again, I think it really gets back to the stigma that continues to, for many individuals, follow or to follow many individuals who have migraine. Women who have, let's pick something else, women who have endometriosis or women who have asthma or women who have rheumatoid arthritis, they go through perimenopause too. But somehow stress is the thing that migraineurs are responsible for. So I would say giving women with migraine a real break about the stress component, I think that we have to really try to stop blaming stress as the major culprit, because there are plenty of women who have equal stress, but they didn't get the gene for migraine. So none of us can control whether we get the gene or not. And if we have it, we need those of us who have it, those of us who treat women who have it, we need to really think about trying to de-stigmatize the disorder. It's a biologic genetic disorder. That's what it is. And it has hormonal influences, and it's not anyone's fault. And it is more frequent in women. It is more common in women, but that's simply because they have the hormonal influence that men don't.
Well, I think one thing women really want to know is there a light at the end of the tunnel? How likely is it that migraine will improve or even disappear completely once they get through menopause? And if not, where can they find support?
Well, I think that some of the older data suggests that women who go through natural menopause, about two-thirds of them who have migraine will essentially have a diminution in their migraine. A third of women who go through surgical menopause will also have a diminution in their migraine. So I think the chances are for many women that that's what they will experience. If they are on the appropriate preventive and acute therapies and hormonal therapies, that may be vastly speeded up, and that may be what they, and I would say that's what women really need. I think that one of the ways to go about that is to look at things like the National Headache Foundation's data bank of people, of clinicians who are interested in migraine and in treating headache. The same is true for academic institutions who have headache programs. The same is true for American Headache Society membership. So look for people who have those things, and then look for someone who also has expertise in menopause. If you find that the headache clinician you're working with doesn't have it, get a partnership, get a team built around that. And then I think the other piece is, don't, if someone tells you something that you feel is intuitively wrong, like if someone says this is not hormone related, keep a diary so that you can see. Looking at that, because it's very hard when you take that to a clinician and they're looking at, that's data. When they look at your data, that can really help them make good decisions and can educate you as to what you may need to do.
And what kind of doctors, what's the best approach to seeking treatment when it seems that neither our gynecologist nor our headache specialist or the doctor we see for migraine really understands the symptoms of both? We can track, like you said, but what other things can we do to seek the best treatment?
Well, I do think that the Menopause Society, that they have members throughout the United States that have, they're certified in the management of menopause. And so, again, partnering with somebody who's interested in headache and who's knowledgeable about headache, and someone who's knowledgeable about menopausal strategies, perimenopausal and menopausal strategies, is probably the best way to do that.
And if you could give one key piece of advice or hope to a woman who is currently in the depths of perimenopausal migraine, what would it be?
Don't give up. Don't give up. Continue. You can find help there. And again, there are many patient organizations, there are many arms. There's an American Association of Migraine Disorders that puts out some really terrific information. Again, the American Headache Society, the National Headache Foundation, many of them, Miles for Migraine, there are many different organizations that put out a lot of information about headache, about migraine in particular. So don't give up. because there's ongoing research, as we see from this recent change in the black box warning. The FDA has, after almost 25 years, changed that warning. So we want you to be part of that change. Keep pressing for appropriate and treatment that really can help you and can change your life. I would just add that one of the joys of taking care of individuals with migraine, we'll stick to women for now, of taking care of women with migraine, is that if you get to see them as young women, or women in perimenopause, early menopause, you can really change the last half of life for them, because you can treat all these other conditions. And by having migraine, so sometimes migraine can mean that you get better care in the long run. That's been missed with this 50 million group, but it's not going to be missed in the future, I don't think.
That's excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.